Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by, once again, Joe Patrick. He is at JAPatrick200 on the Twitters. Welcome back, Joe. We'll be joined by Adnan here in a little bit. As you guys know, he's watching the NBA draft. You know, he's blowing me off for his true love, the Atlanta Hawks. No, but we'll have Adnan in here in just a little bit. Of course, we've got Joe here right now. Welcome back to the show, Joe. How you doing?
Kevin, thanks for having me on. It's that time of year where, you know, we have to fill the time to, you know, talk about whatever it is. So I think we can actually have a good conversation tonight because it's good time to kind of dive deep into the roster in some respects before, you know, the news really starts coming thick and fast from training camp and such.
Yeah, it does. It's a slow time of year, but it's a fun off season. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of moving parts, you know, on offense. Obviously we spent last Wednesday's show talking about all the new pieces on offense, what we were looking for, sort of the make or break guys on this roster. On the defensive side, I think it's even more like up in the air because it is a much bigger transition in some ways because it's really the scheme. I mean, it's like we're having like the third different defensive coordinator in 3 years. Yeah. We have a head coach that has dabbled on both sides of the ball, but most recently was a defensive coordinator. And then we have a new defensive coordinator, Jimmy Lake, coming in. So really the defense, I think, is the much more high variance of the two units. I think there's a lot of intrigue surrounding the defense and how good can it be? How good will it be? This is, I think, a harder question to answer, but there's definitely pieces that I think are intriguing to talk about. We're going to talk about quite a few of them tonight. Just kind of taking an opportunity to talk about the players that could make or break this defense, the guys that we're looking for to either elevate this unit, right, to what it was last year, or maybe even better, or the guys that if they don't hit what we're expecting, the defense could have a bit of a downturn. So hopefully that won't happen, but no matter what, guys, we're going to bring that to you here in just a second real quick. Before we get to it, I want to thank our sponsor once again, BetOnline. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. The NHL finally over. What a dramatic end to that Stanley Cup as the Panthers take home and narrowly avoid the Falcons-esque choke job there. So thankfully, you know, I was like, oh, maybe they'll get off the Falcons if they do this, but, you know, it doesn't happen, whatever. But at any rate, lots more sports coming. Baseball is obviously going strong. We got golf, we got soccer, we got fights, UFC, MMA, boxing, all that stuff. And BetOnline's got every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, guys, you can head on over to BetOnline's new online casino, get in on that game of blackjack or poker that you've been itching for, unwind with one of their over 150 slots games. What are you waiting for, folks? Head to that website today, BetOnline, to get in on the action. Just remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, so as the guest, Joe, going to open it up to you first for your chosen, you know, we'll get in our like top easy guys before Adnan gets here. We'll take all the good ones, you know, so he really has to struggle. But yeah, I mean, who's someone you're really interested in and one of your top make or break guys on this defense? Cause I think there's quite a few folks we could talk about.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And just before I get into specific guys, I did just kind of want to, you know, jump back on what you were talking about, broadly speaking about this defense. It's funny. I was actually talking to somebody about this just the other day where, you know, it hasn't been discussed a ton in Falcon circles because, you know, so much of the intrigue over the course of the offseason has been surrounding the offense, which obviously was, you know, needed fixing clearly in that quarterback. And you had all the, you know, drama with Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix being drafted, and it just kind of sucked up all the oxygen that we haven't really, I think, kind of fully dove into what this defense kind of presents this team, because it is kind of, to me, it feels kind of boom busty where you have the potential. There's a lot of guys on this roster who have a lot of potential that we are hoping to see, that you would think that it would be about the time where in their careers where they would start to break out. And if they do, then it could, you know, make this Falcons team one that's, you know, really challenging at the top of the NFC. But on the other side of that coin, if things don't go their way, then, you know, it's the opposite. So, I just want to say it's kind of an interesting group in that respect. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for players who aren't even necessarily kind of listed, you know, as a starter right now because of, you know, potential things that could develop down the line over the course of the season. So with that said, I think the guy that I've just been intrigued by for a long time, and I feel like we were robbed last year, is Troy Andersen. He's a player that you would expect to be on the field almost every single play because of, you know, his versatility. Now, I guess that's kind of in, I don't know if it's in question, but Nate Landman kind of presents a maybe a different, something different that coaches can use that may affect Troy. But I think that just with the athletic gifts that he has, also combined with the inexperience, I think the positives and kind of the potential pitfalls of Troy are what make him such an intriguing player, because and to see how he kind of comes out of that. But I mean, I think Troy Andersen at, you know, the top end of his potential outcomes is, you know, a really sensational linebacker that can do all sorts of different things. I don't think that he's necessarily going to be, obviously, like the best he'll ever be this coming year, but I think that this is the year where we need to see him take a step. And obviously it's not to criticize him last year, because I actually thought he was playing relatively well last year before the injury. But you know, that was only a couple games. So he's one that I'm just really, really kind of keying in on right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he was one of my guys for sure that I wanted to talk about. So I'm glad you brought him up. And really, like, I thought that Troy Andersen was like the biggest wild card in the defense last year. I'm sure we talked about this in the run up to the season, and as a guy that, like, he has all the talent in the world, one of the most athletic players, most unique players in the NFL, and that he was like a 10 perfect 10 RAS at like five different positions. And he played that, he was that way in college too. He played quarterback, he played running back, and eventually settled on linebacker as his position of choice. And you know, he's a guy where the sky's the limit, but he never had time to just play one position. Like, he's Montana State was like, we need you to play quarterback now. We need you to play running back now. Can you play linebacker? Okay. And he did it. And obviously at that level of competition, his talent was so great that it didn't really matter that the instincts, you know, and the finer points of the linebacker position weren't really there. Going to the NFL, it's a different game. You can't just be athletic, because everyone's athletic. You can't, guys know how to cover up any limitations they have with their superior technique, with their tape study, you know, with their understanding of how to manipulate defenses. The offenses are better. They're going to put you in binds where you have to be able to quickly read and react and process a lot of stuff that, you know, at Montana State, you just didn't have to do that. If you were fast enough, if you were strong enough, you could just get over that stuff. And we saw Troy, you know, struggle a bit on and off, obviously, as a rookie. And then last year, I think he was coming on, I think, and it was, you know, not perfect, but I don't think anyone was expecting perfection from Troy. I think they were expecting relatively high variance, but splash plays, and we were getting the splash plays. And then to see his season cut so short, it was really disappointing. I know he's probably the most disappointed of anyone. We just didn't get to see the defense the way they wanted, with him basically being able to be the true Mike and be the true do everything linebacker, because I think even as it stands now, Troy has the highest ceiling in coverage. He has the highest ceiling as a blitzer. You know, he's bigger than most linebackers. He's more athletic than most linebackers in today's NFL. Like, it's just, he's the whole package. So if he is able to put that stuff together, if he's able to basically finish the mental development, which I'm sure they continue to work closely with him, even when he was rehabbing, to be like, okay, well, you can't get the on-field reps, but you can continue to get the mental reps, you can continue your tape study and all this stuff, so that when you are back, you can just jump right in. And I think he's kind of being overlooked. I think people just assume Nate Landman's going to take over his spot, because Landman played great. So it's not like Landman deserves to be on the field, but we know with Landman, he's more limited in coverage. He just doesn't have the juice to chase down athletic tight ends or running backs. He's smart in zone coverage. He can play that. He's a great run defender. Definitely made his mark in that area, but he doesn't have the ability to be that do-it-all Mike that Troy Andersen does. So, you know, some of these guys are going to play and some aren't, but I agree with you that Troy, I think, is one of the most interesting and biggest, like, wild cards, where if he can, you know, people always talk about linebackers being devalued, but I think if you find that true Mike linebacker, you know, like the guys of old, right, the famous guys, that can transform your defense. That can end up being a critical piece. And I think Troy could potentially be that for the Falcons.
Yeah, and something the Falcons coaches talked about last year is the benefit of having a player like him, with the ideal coverage skills that they hope he can get to, is he just allows you to do different things in coverage. It's almost like, you know, when you're like kind of setting up the back end coverage, it's actually interesting. The Falcons almost have like Jerry Gray, who's kind of like coming up with the coverage schemes or devising coverage schemes. And then last year was Ryan Nielsen, who was basically kind of coming up with the fronts that would then pair up with those. And obviously Ryan Nielsen coordinated the whole thing overall. And, I think Troy just allows you to put the puzzle together in all kinds of different ways. And that can confuse quarterbacks and just gives a lot of advantages to the defense. And so that will be so important for him, because I did think that he struggled in that respect in his rookie year. I think when you look back to his rookie year, what was so evident was just how explosive he is as an athlete when he's able to play free. And I honestly thought some of his best moments came on special teams, where I think that he will again be like one of the best special teams players in the NFL. He blocked a punt that first year when the team was on the road against the Rams. That helped to kind of turn the tide in that game. They almost came back. He also had an incredible play. I'll never forget. It was against the 49ers in that game when they beat the 49ers at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 49ers had like a million guys out in that game, by the way. But funny enough, it was Ray McCloud who caught a punt, returned it. Troy was down, ran down, covered the punt. He was like the first guy down there, kind of missed the tackle or whatever. McCloud ran past him. And then McCloud was ultimately about to run for a touchdown. And then all of a sudden, Troy Anderson comes from the other side and has caught all the way back up to him and brings him down on a pure effort play. And just the speed on display there, just, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes your mouth kind of salivate as a defensive guy, just to see the potential that a player like that could have. You hope that it comes to fruition. But again, you know, he's a guy, like to your point, he's just played in so many different positions. Can he kind of pick up that mental side of the game? And I think it's more than just kind of, you know, knowing what your responsibility is, but it's that ability to have that really quick reaction and like no hesitation and being able to, you know, execute whatever you're set out to do on that play. So if he can do that, then I think that the sky is kind of the limit for him. And I think to the point that you made about the size, like I think people kind of forget he's 6'4". He looks even bigger, I would say, just having seen him this offseason with a year to kind of, you know, rehab from an injury. I think his legs look massive. I think he's really developed physically. And so hopefully, you know, that is a sign of good things to come for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the timing of his injury, as much as it sucked for 2023, it basically means that he's fully healthy now. Like, he's had plenty of time to rehab. This is not one of those things where it's probably going to bleed over. It's also with the upper body stuff, you know, it's easier to stay conditioned and all that sort of stuff and continue doing work when you don't have. So it's, you know, no injury is good. Certainly not a season ending injury, but for Troy Anderson, I don't think this will be something that impacts his future. Like, some injuries obviously they can linger. But we've just seen that with Kyle Pitts with his knee injury. So I think he has a great chance to get back on the horse this year and get out there and do some good stuff for this team. And I don't think it's nice that they don't have to fully rely on it. Like, if he needs more time to acclimate, they don't just have to throw him out there because they have no better option. If they want to play him more in coverage, if they want to just let him work his way back a little, they can. But they don't have to. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. And, you know, last year, it's funny, he actually came back to the practice field, I think, on the last week of the season. They never like activated him from injured reserve, but he did come back. And so I think that would show that he's been pretty much like full go, or like, you know, physically able to do everything over the course of this offseason that the team would want. And, just like a kind of a little tidbit, I think I've shared this before, but, he lived with Nate Landman during the course of last season. I would imagine they will probably have the same arrangement this year. And, you know, he was like, it seems to have been pretty like actively engaged with, you know, everything that Nate was trying to do to get prepared and trying to help him and break down his film. So I think that's also really kind of a good thing for him to have been doing during that downtime.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'd forgotten about that. It's a good detail to remember, because those two are probably going to be linked together for some time going forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know we were talking. Troy Anderson was the first player we were getting to, just so you know. But I know you're coming off the hot draft takes with the NBA draft there. So what do you think about Atlanta Hawks selection at number one? We get a little NBA interlude here.
I don't know. I feel like the drafts should be abolished in all sports.
Was it that bad, or I don't know anything about the players. So.
Yeah, it's after the Falcons draft, after the Hawks draft,
I know you were a big Sarr guy. It seems like he just like bullied the team into not taking him, which is pretty weak, but.
Yeah, luckily this is a football show, and unlike the Falcons draft, where I was upset about the pick, and then I had to talk about that for 4 hours. Now you know what? I don't have to think about the.
You
Hawks
don't. Pick. No, you can ignore my question entirely because I don't know anything about it. You could tell me it was the best pick ever, and I believe it.
Yeah. Obviously, we'll let the just like the Falcons, we'll let the experts be the experts, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
By tomorrow, I don't know. I feel like I'm different. So when it comes to the Hawks and when it comes to the Falcons, for me personally, when it comes to the Falcons, because I cover the team, I feel like I have a duty to be as objective as possible. Mm-hmm. And I have to sort of detach my like fandom from what I actually think is right. I have to like look at it with my head as much as my heart. With the Hawks, I absolutely go into cope mode. Like tomorrow, I'm going to absolutely fully cope with whatever they did, and I'm going to just talk myself into it no matter what.
Yes. Well, hey, you just know what it is, and I appreciate that about you. You've really broken it down expertly here, your feelings, and we appreciate you for that. So we won't dwell on the NBA because this is an NFL program. But yeah, we were talking about Troy Andersen as our first make or break player. I know you got Troy Andersen takes as well. He's a guy we talked about a lot leading up to last season too. So what do you think about Troy Andersen this season?
Troy Andersen is a guy who, remember when we took him in the second round a couple of years ago, we said that, he definitely was not a finished product. He was someone where, a defensive coordinator could sort of mold him a little bit because he had such raw talent, but he hadn't really been playing linebacker for as long as some of these other dudes have been playing linebacker. And he has the speed, he has some positional versatility. He has a lot of positional versatility. You can throw him in there as an emergency quarterback, honestly. he was a solid special teams and then last year was the year where he was really supposed to take that sort of next step. And unfortunately, we remember it, like he had a really strong training camp, and then early on suffers that shoulder injury, I think against the Packers in week 2, and he's gone for the season, and I absolutely hated that for him, just because you're a young player, the runway has sort of been cleared for you a little bit, and then you have the entire season sort of robbed from you with a freak injury. Which no one could really do anything about. So I feel like a lot of fans haven't really been fair toward Troy Andersen. I'm seeing, the B word bust being thrown around for him a little bit. And it's like, all right, he really has not had a real opportunity with this team. There was never any plans for him to play as a rookie. And then last year when he was supposed to play, obviously he gets hurt. Nate Landman steps in, and we remember Nate Landman just exceeds all of our expectations, and he was spectacular. And now we're sort of excited to have both Andersen and Nate Landman, there to have, and we have some like serious linebacker depth. Caden Ellis is in there as well. I feel like this is going to be a very important, almost a make or break year type for Troy Andersen. I look at it similar with Kyle Pitts on offense, right? Like Kyle Pitts threw a lot of stuff that have not been his fault, has not really had, the career that we've expected out of him thus far. And now whether it's fair or it's not fair, like this is the year for him to sort of, he has to show up this year. I feel like it's a very similar boat for Troy Andersen, who has to do so on defense as well. And, hopefully he's gonna really sort of flourish in this new defensive scheme. He's gonna get the reps that he that he needs, that he desires. And I think that I'm hoping that Troy Andersen is going to really take a big step, and if he takes a big step, then it'll really sort of help this defense against the regression that I'm sort of expecting for it this season.
Yeah, I know. I think he's one of the most interesting players, and I think to fight off that regression, I think the key thing is that Troy Andersen does need to be healthy and in play. And I think the one thing the Falcons didn't really have in the linebacking core last year that Joe and I were kind of alluding to was like they didn't really have a guy that could play the coverage well. You know, Caden Ellis is very sound in coverage, but again, not really the deep movement skills and change of direction, not really his thing. And the same with Nate Landman. You know, both like, so losing Troy Andersen, who I think they were planning to be their sort of chess piece in coverage back there, and their sort of sideline to sideline linebacker, you know, that was tough on the defense. And hopefully this will be a piece that can really elevate the whole unit and give the linebacker and tight end coverage, which they've been really just bad at covering tight ends, basically, as long as we can remember, right? Maybe Troy Andersen could finally be the answer to the tight end coverage woes. That would really be something. But yeah, Adnan, who's your guy? Who would you like to talk about first here in terms of the make or break guys on the defense?
Clark Phillips. I mean, I've been talking about I've been sort of beating this dead horse, except it's not really a dead horse at all. But I've been bringing up the secondary, and I've, you know, admittedly been complaining about the lack of moves in the secondary for months now. And, you know, we're now in late June. Team still hasn't made any moves in the secondary. So, you know, I mean, I wouldn't expect it at this point now. Maybe during training camp, they could look at some veterans. But yeah, right now, Clark Phillips is slotted in as your cornerback two, opposite of AJ Terrell. I think they are planning on playing him on the outside. He had a really, really strong college career on the outside. So I think they're hoping for that internal growth for Clark Phillips to grow into that, you know, sustainable starter on the exterior boundary. But yeah, this is going to be one of those where if you don't have someone who really steps up and really takes the bull by the horns with that cornerback two position, then this lack of movement when it comes to the secondary is really going to show its face, and it's going to be a very ugly face. And Clark Phillips is going to be the guy who has the first stab at it. He's going to get that first crack at that CB2 position. And, you know, he could be the difference between this secondary being, you know, arguably the worst in the league and possibly around league average. And right now, sitting where I am right now, I would absolutely sign up instantly for a league average secondary. I think a lot of Falcons fans would, and I think Clark Phillips is right now going to probably be the most important player out of that secondary, because, you know, they don't have a lot of options, and he's someone that they're really relying on and really counting on, and his growth is what they're counting on as justification for not really bringing in any serious CB2 contenders. No offense to Kevin King or any of those guys that they signed sort of off the scrap heap a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, Clark Phillips is really interesting. I agree. I think he's one of the more interesting players to talk about on this defense. I know Daniel Flick was pretty adamant that he thinks Clark Phillips is in the lead for the number two job, going up against Mike Hughes, who's also going back to the outside, apparently. It's interesting that you know, the two guys that were fighting in the slot that D. Alford ended up winning last year are both back to playing outside. This year it's kind of interesting. But what do you think about Clark Phillips and his potential this year, Joe?
Yeah, I totally agree with everything Adnan said in terms of him kind of needing to fulfill that role of the cornerback two in a suitable way. So otherwise the front office is going to get blowback for kind of leaving that position exposed. I do think that, you know, with what we expect from Jimmy Lake's defense, that it will set up better for him this year than it would have under Ryan Nielsen, who really liked to play those, you know, man heavy, kind of like bump and run kind of coverages with his cornerbacks. And that's one of the reasons why they wanted to go after a guy like Jeff Okuda, who they thought could do that and did that reasonably well for the first half of the season. And then when Clark Phillips came in, you could really see that he was a little bit mismatched in those circumstances. Teams were, you know, able to throw on him. It's not like he was like out of plays. He wasn't getting beat badly, but he's just, you know, the size mismatch really is a problem. And it feels like he'll be much more capable of impacting the game when he can kind of keep his eyes on the quarterback and his own coverage and being able to use his natural instincts to then, you know, maybe gamble in some respects, but make enough plays that he proves his worth opposite of AJ Terrell, because you would expect he's going to get many opportunities with teams thrown away from AJ. So definitely agree there. You know, it's probably the position you feel least comfortable in at this point in the offseason. And I think you're just kind of hoping, again, this is kind of a theme throughout the team, but I think especially kind of in the secondary, you're kind of banking on Raheem Morris's ability to kind of connect with young players and be able to put them in advantageous situations that will help this team get by. When I think about this defense, I think a lot about that 2022 Falcons defense, which, you know, gave up a lot of yards. It wasn't like a particularly good defense and certainly not like a talented defense, but they kept points down. You know, they gave the team a chance to win. That team was 7-10. That team overperformed what they should have done that year, really, and they had opportunities to win even more games than that year. So you know, if you can get, like, I think that's kind of what you're hoping for out of this group, is just a defense that's not, you know, giving up tons of explosive plays and at least making opposing offenses have it to work for, you know, everything they get in games.
Yeah. Totally agree. I mean, I think reasons to be confident in Clark Phillips, he's used to being the alpha, right? I mean, he was at Utah. His size, he played a lot of big receivers in college, Drake London, notably among them.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably the corner that played Drake London the best of anyone that he went up against that year. He's a guy that's used to doing it. When you're in zone, the size isn't as big of a deal. It's more about the anticipation. It's more about being able to get your hands on the football. So when the Falcons were playing, you know, pretty man heavy last year, it's not something he did a lot in college. So him getting to go back to a zone heavy scheme is probably going to help him regardless of where he lines up. I think him lining up outside, the reason to be confident is because that's what he did in college. Like, that's what he played the majority of his career. That's the tape that you were evaluating him on when you were drafting him. Him moving to the slot was always a projection. I always thought he probably should just stay outside. And I, when you saw him play last year, even in a scheme which I think wasn't incredibly friendly to his talents, he was up and down, which as a rookie playing, like starting outside, I mean, it that's to be expected. So I don't think there's anything overly alarming about what he did as a rookie. Obviously, it wasn't incredibly encouraging. I mean, it is what it is. But I think him playing across from AJ Terrell and having the backup of Jesse Bates and that sort of thing, like, you don't necessarily need to have him be just completely locked down on that side. Hopefully he'll have an opportunity to sort of grow into that role. I think that he's just a really smart guy. He is an absolute football junkie. He eats, breathes, mm-hmm. sleeps it. He's going to be prepared, and that's a big part of it, especially as a young player, is just getting your mentals right, getting the intellectual part of the game down as fast as you can, and then getting adjusted to the speed of the league after that. So I'm excited to see what he does. If he does end up winning that job, I think I agree with Daniel that he's probably got to be the favorite, given, you know, he's young and he's, I think, got the upside. Whereas I think we kind of know what Mike Hughes is, and unless you're expecting him to return to Chiefs Mike Hughes, where he was actually really good outside, which, again, that was the only other time in his NFL career he's played outside. So maybe he could do that.
What's funny is that in the secondary, it's like D. Alford is like much more of like a lock as a starter, yeah, in his role as the nickelback than, yeah, either of these guys are at the other cornerback.
Yeah, no, I think D. Alford is like absolutely locked in the slot. Like, it's not even really a conversation, which is like funny, because last year I was like, oh, we have these three guys competing for the slot.
Yeah.
And like, strangely, it seems like Antonio Hamilton is like the backup slot, which, like, he played pretty much outside with the Cardinals last year. So, you know, who knows? They're going to move guys around, obviously, and it's going to be an interesting setup. But yeah, I really like Clark Phillips. I like his potential in this defense, and the Falcons are going to be depending on him or Mike Hughes and probably both of them at some point during the season to keep this secondary afloat. And they're going to be relying, I think, on the scheme more than ever to sort of make things easier on these guys because they're not going to have the absolute premium talent. They've got AJ Terrell and they've got Jesse Bates, but the rest of it, they're going to have to kind of cobble together. And, you know, that's kind of what the Rams did last year and they were fairly successful at it. So maybe we can also hope that the offense will be, you know, not turning the ball over at like the highest rate in the league. That probably would go a long way to helping with that too. But all right, my guy I'm going to go with, another obvious one, but he's been one of my guys basically since he got here, and that's Arnold Ebikadi. I think the team is placing a ton of faith in him to become the guy this year, at least in terms of the pass rush. And you know, we have seen him grow. It's not been consistent, and I think him in the 4-3 that they were going more towards under Ryan Nielsen, it was just never going to be a great fit. He was kind of just going to be a designated pass rusher there, which is fine. But you're hoping for more in the second round. You know, you're hoping that that guy will turn into more than that. Letting him stand up, letting him rush from the wider alignments, that sort of thing. He can be a good run defender when he's put in those advantageous situations. He's good at setting the edge. It's just like putting him head up on a tackle and expecting him to win against a guy that's probably got, you know, 60 to 70 pounds on him. I mean, that's not really his game. He's great in pursuit. He's tough on the outside. He's good at setting that edge, but just like, asking him to just go head up against a tackle, I don't know that was ever going to produce great results. But I think as a pass rusher, you know, letting him stand up, that's always been what he was most comfortable in college. He's got the moves. He's actually pretty advanced. We know he's athletic. He's got the length. I mean, he's got all the tools to make it happen. And I think he's going to get the snaps this year too, where they're going to just let him play more and really be depending on him to get it done. And I hope that he can do it. I have some faith that he can. You know, does that mean double digit sacks? Maybe not, but if he could just, you know, keep climbing towards that would be something. But, you know, last year he had a pretty good, you know, it looks better, I think, in hindsight than it did like at the time where it just felt like it wasn't really consistent. But I think, you know, he ends up finishing the season, you know, with 6 sacks, 12 quarterback hits, you know, so not bad. 2 forced fumbles as well. So I'm hoping that he could take that next step because the team really needs it. They really need it bad. Yeah, what do you think about Ebikadi, Joe?
Yeah, I mean those numbers are not bad, and they're especially not bad in the context of the amount of snaps that he was getting, which I think is what has a lot of people excited. He's the one I'm like who's getting the most positive buzz on this defense right now that I'm most kind of cautiously skeptical about at this point, just because he was kind of that designated pass rusher where he was getting like very advantageous, you know, situations to come in and just kind of pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. And I'm just talking about as far as how well he can get to the quarterback this coming year. If he is playing more snaps and has to be, you know, where he's in situations where it's not such an obvious passing down and he's got to be aware of other responsibilities as well. So, you know, it's been interesting to watch him over the course of his career. I felt like when he came in to that first training camp, I thought that he was kind of struggling with the size and length of like these NFL offensive tackles. And I remember watching him go up against Caleb McGarry, and McGarry was just kind of stopping him pretty routinely on a lot of reps. And it does seem like, you know, he's kind of been able to figure out how to utilize his strengths better to get around these guys. He's got a really nice burst and get off the line, which he can use. And he's used that spin move back to the inside quite a bit. That's been effective for him. So it's been interesting just to watch his pass rush game evolve here over the couple of years. But, you know, again, it's kind of like, you know, Troy Andersen, where it's like, this is kind of the year. And I guess were those guys in the same draft?
Yeah,
I think they were. They had 2 second rounders that year. Yeah, and yeah. D'Angelo Malone as well. That's gone the wrong direction. But, you know, it's like it's that time in their careers where you hope to see them kind of make that leap. And, you know, that's just how it is for these guys. And, you know, it seems like it's set up well, again, with the coaching situation around him, with Raheem Morris's ability to get a lot out of so many, you know, young players last year. And obviously he's not a rookie, but still on that rookie contract. And so I'm optimistic about him. I think one of the reasons why people can be conflicted about Ebikadi, aside from just like, you know, any lack of statistical production is, you know, he could have had more sacks last year. He was a little undisciplined in his rush sometimes, in kind of like keeping contained. I know Kyler Murray escaped a pocket last year that absolutely broke the Falcons on that game-winning drive. I believe it was on the game-winning drive that the Cardinals had in that game. I think there was another one, a missed sack against the Vikings that was critical. Yeah. And so, you know, these are the kinds of moments. There was like so many key moments where he was so close to, you know, really largely impacting the game, but ultimately he didn't. And so, you know, I guess the big question is going to be whether he can actually, you know, come through in some of those bigger moments. Because for these pass rushers, you know, if you come through in some of those big moments, then it totally changes the perception of who you are as a pass rusher.
Yeah, it's a critical part of it. You know, do you make that split second play or do you just miss it? Because that's sacks half the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if you got there half, you know, a split second earlier, it would have been a sack and the game would be over, but you didn't. So hopefully he will be able to do that. What do you think about Ebukadi, Adnan?
I mean, yeah, it's similar to the Clark Phillips one, right? Where, interior, the Falcons loaded up on interior pass rushers. So a lot of guys on the inside, we saw it throughout the draft. They took a lot of them, and they spent a lot of draft pick capital on those guys. But, you know, they didn't really address the exterior pass rush as much, probably because they were hoping for that internal growth. You know, Zach Harrison is there. You know, we'll see if they can get anything out of D'Angelo Malone. That I feel like that would be gravy, honestly, because D'Angelo Malone hasn't really done anything at this point. He could even be on the roster bubble as a sneaky mm-hmm. player this year. And then you have Arnold Ebukadi, who's the most important one of those players, especially now that Calais Campbell is gone, Bud Dupree is gone. So, you know, last year the Falcons really relied on sort of that quantity of pass rushers and hoping that they sort of build up to that number of sacks. And in fairness, they got over 40 sacks for the first time since 2004. I don't think any of us really saw 40 sacks coming last season. With Ebukadi, it would be obviously massive if he can take that leap. He was a second-round pick. He is a technician. He was someone where, you know, it's not like that Vic Beasley type thing where he only has one elite move and he only spams it every single time. You know, he came in as this guy who has, you know, a number of different pass rushing moves, a bunch of different counters. But one thing that sort of does worry me a little bit, and I touched on it in a previous show that is sort of Vic Beasley-esque, is that his number of pressures or his pressure percentage versus his sack percentage does not really paint a very promising story from last year, because I don't think he was in the top like 30 when it came to pressure percentage in the NFL last year. And he was in, I think, the top 3 when it came to sack percentage in converting that pressure percentage. I think it was him, Trey Hendrickson, I think may have been the only guy that was ahead of him. I'm not completely sure, but we know that, you know, what plays in the NFL, what really showcases consistency is how often can you pressure the quarterback? How often can you sort of put yourself in that position? And then sometimes you're just unlucky with not finishing the sack. You know, all the great ones, not everyone's going to finish every single sack, but if it's showing that, you know, you're sort of not getting to the quarterback as much, but you're still converting a very high percentage of those into sacks, you know, that shows a bit of luck, right? We saw it with Vic Beasley in 2016. I think he converted 55% of his pressures into sacks to lead the league that year. And that's an unsustainable amount. So I'm not saying that, Arnold Ebukadi is going to be the next Vic Beasley in terms of that. I am just saying that, you know, the advanced numbers sort of paint more of a troubling picture. And, you know, it's going to be up to Ebukadi to sort of work on his game, to sort of, you know, he's going into year 3. Nobody really questions his work ethic, really. It's going to be up to him to sort of take that next step as that pass rusher, and to understand that, hey, I'm going to be the guy that this team relies on as that premier pass rusher to make everyone else's life you know, easier on this defense, to make the secondary's life easier, to make Grady Jarrett's life easier, to make David Onyemata's life easier, to where they can't really double team those guys. And, you know, Ebukadi is going to have every single opportunity this year to step into that role and to be that guy, the same way that Clark Phillips will as a cornerback too. But, you know, it's going to be on him because, I'm going to be a little bit troubled if he really does not, you know, step into that role, because right now I feel like it's him and Zach Harrison. One of those guys has to take that leap to really sort of keep this Falcons defense, keep this Falcons pass rush afloat. Because, you know, Braylon Trice, we all like him, but, you know, he's young. He's a rookie. It's not fair to put those expectations on him. Grady Jarrett is great. He's coming off a torn ACL. David Onyemata is great. You know, I've nothing but praise for him. I'm not worried about the guys on the interior. We need that game breaker on the exterior, on the outside, especially now that Calais is gone. You know, Bud Dupree didn't really do that much, but he's gone. So, you know, it's huge. Phillips and Arnold Ebukadi, I feel like these are going to be the two, in my opinion, I think these are going to be the two most important players on defense this year, just given, you know, the positions they play and given the fact that the Falcons haven't really invested that much in those positions.
No.
I got to repeat something, re-emphasize something that Adnan said. 40 sacks for the first time since 2004. That's 19 years. That's so long to not have had 40 sacks. I mean, good for them that they did it last year.
It was surprising. I think we were like, we'd be happy with 30.
Yeah.
We'd be happy with 30 to 35.
What, 18 the year before?
Yeah. I was like, can we get to 30? 40. I mean, that was impressive.
That was
stuff
the first time a lot of Falcons fans had seen 40 sacks in their entire life.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was wild stuff how bad this team has been at getting to the quarterback. There's no question. So we don't have to get to 40 again, but if we could just like stay in the 30s and not go back down into the teens, that would be a great step just to start there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If they regress from 40 down into like the mid 20s, then it's going to be like, okay, like, you know, it could be a rough go for the defense, but
yeah, it could.
You know, well, that's why we need these guys to sort of step up and fill those shoes, fill that role, and to, you know, keep those sacks afloat. But yeah, it's I would feel a lot better if they sort of, you know, address pass rush more. But you know, what's done is done, and obviously they believe in their ability to coach these guys up. So, you know, we'll see what Raheem and company can do.
Yeah, we will see. And on to the next one, Joe, who's another person you'll be watching on this defense in 2024?
Well, it's not like that. I think that he's a make or break kind of guy, but I just think that it's a very interesting year for Richie Grant this year after what happened last year. And I guess you could kind of, with this conversation, you could even just tie in DeMarco Helms with him, because it looks to me like Helms is kind of, has the inside track to be this team's safety opposite Jesse Bates. And it's a good thing for Helms. I think that speaks highly to, you know, his ability as a seventh round pick to really, you know, jump in and I don't want to say take it over, because I do think that there is a little bit of competition there in this training camp. But I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, yeah, like I said, he's got the inside track. And, you know, I was going to bring this up earlier when we were talking about the nickel situation with D. Alford kind of locked in as that nickel. I do wonder if they will, if Richie Grant, you know, is on the team when they break camp, which I expect him to be, if they use him if they use a lot more kind of like three safety looks and use Richie Grant as, almost like a dime back, but not like, you know, basically like with him and Alford both are out there at the same time. We saw Jerry Gray, like when we go out to practice, basically when media is allowed to be out there, we see the defensive backs kind of going through a lot of their match concepts. And so you can usually see, and we like kind of what personnel they plan to be using. And you could really see them start to involve Helms more as the season progressed. And obviously then he takes over, but it really did seem like they were much more willing to get creative with three safety combinations and such in that secondary. So, you know, last year was such a tough year for him, because I've actually listened to Aaron Freeman, what he's had to say about Grant, and he seems to be kind of the voice who's kind of higher on him than most everybody else, because I think it's, you know, the reasons for being down on him are pretty obvious. He gave up some big plays, some really critical plays. Some of the most critical plays of the Falcons season kind of came down to Richie Grant getting beaten on certain plays, whether that was in Arizona or at home against the Buccaneers on that backbreaking loss. But I'll give him this, like, he is, as a character, really hard to like bring down. He is like a really fun loving guy, great kind of clubhouse guy, to borrow a baseball term, but just somebody that I think the players all love too, like all those other defensive backs kind of just like love his infectious energy that he brings. And I think that the Falcons will also trying to lean into that, but again, like a lot of these guys we've been talking about, it's kind of a make or break deal for him this year. And what will the future be for him if, you know, he doesn't end up being able to beat out DeMarco Helms? You know, can he still contribute to this defense? You would think, you would hope that a player with his experience at this point in his career would be able to help contribute to what is generally going to be a much younger defense than it was last year. So we'll see how it all shakes out, but I think it's going to be a very interesting dynamic to watch, and kind of another one of those classic, you know, training camp battles that we'll get to watch unfold.
Yeah, no, I think Richie Grant is one of the more intriguing guys because, you know, as a UCF legend, I am contractually obligated to pull for him forever, which I will continue to do. But, you know, it was a rough year for him. You know, we've just been kind of waiting for him to take the next step. And it seems like he's just kind of been the same guy.
We've been waiting forever. We've been waiting for a while.
He's been the same guy where he'll have some splash plays and he'll have some big mistakes. And it's like, that's, you can certainly stick around in the NFL as a backup with that as your resume. And it, you know, obviously you could do a lot worse than have, I mean, you could have no splash plays and just lots of mistakes, but you know, for him, like when you take a safety in the second round, you expect that guy to be an impact player. And Grant hasn't been that yet. He hasn't gotten the consistency down. And it's kind of the final straw this year, right? I mean, you touched on it. Like this is a contract year now for Richie Grant. This is where he needs to sort of prove that he can be a starter, or at least prove that he can be a valuable like third safety backup, because that could still lead to him getting a second contract here in Atlanta. It would be much smaller than it would be if he was a starter, but you know, guys do tend to play really well in contract years, right? It is a thing. So it wouldn't shock me if Grant just has a great training camp, takes control of that second safety job, and sort of stabilizes that position next to Jesse Bates and is everything I ever dreamed of when he was a UCF legend coming to Atlanta. But, you know, we'll have to see how that shakes out. But to me, yeah, I mean, at this point, I do feel more confident in DeMarco Helms being the starter. But I think Grant obviously has the athleticism in his favor. So I don't know what to expect there, but it's definitely one of the more interesting battles to watch. And how do you feel about how Richie Grant's looking going into this season, Adnan?
I'm not letting Richie Grant trip me again. Like I am not like I'm gonna probably tear my hair out if I have to watch a full season of Richie Grant starting at strong safety for my favorite football team. Like maybe, you know, he can sort of you know, have a home in a role as a sort of a box to box guy as sort of a run stopper, but you know, it's the modern NFL, right? You can't even be a linebacker anymore without being able to cover, you know, the other team's receiving threats. It's a passing league, let alone a safety. And Richie Grant cannot really, you know, he can't cover tight ends. He's shown to be very weak in coverage overall. And I mean, I want to sit here and I want to talk about how I have this hope for Richie Grant that he is going to be, you know, he's going to prove us all wrong. And yeah, you're right. It is a contract year. And, you know, we're just going to see a brand new Richie Grant coming out next year, who's going to really sort of justify that draft pedigree of, you know, the second round pick that the Falcons, you know, invested in him over Creed Humphrey a few years
Don't
ago.
Don't say that word. For me, the grief is still tuned here on that one. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, his name is escaping me too, but like the safety for the Javon Holland, was it for the Dolphins?
Yep.
They could have taken him too, but yeah, you know, they traded back and took Richie Grant instead. And Holland was an all pro last year at the same position. But yeah, I can't do it. I'm sorry. Like I'm not going to do it. Like I don't, there's an outside chance that Richie Grant may not even be on this team come week one because
he's expensive. Yep. He is
expensive. He would be an expensive backup. It's what, over $3 million in cap hit? Yeah. to keep him. And, you know, to be completely honest with you, I don't know. I don't know if I can fully trust DeMarco Helms as a starter for this team, because same thing, sort of coverage issues. But I feel like I've seen enough of Richie Grant to where I'm damn sure I can't trust Richie Grant as a starter. But I don't know what the Falcons are going to do. They either have to sign someone externally, because I trust Helms as a backup for sure. But if they don't sign someone externally, then I'm just worried. I feel like safety is going to be a huge hole next to Jesse Bates.
Yeah, that is a concern. And you know, I think if they do make the decision to move on from Richie Grant, it would probably be like, it's probably like, if he's not starting, you know, are we really going to pay $3 million to our third safety? You know, they'd probably rather just go pay $3 million to another safety that they think has a chance to start. So, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. The Falcons would save like over $3 million by moving on from Grant. So he has to kind of prove that he's worth that money, or the team might go ahead and cut bait there. I mean, at this point, he's the coach that drafted him is no longer here. You know, most of the coaching staff that did is no longer here either. So, you know, he's in a difficult spot. There's no doubt about that.
It's interesting. We've been bringing up, you know, I feel like there's a lot of second round picks that this team has made where we're still like, all right, is this going to be the year where we see the value from here? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's been
back to Terry Fontenot, right? Like, yeah. This isn't a good look. Like, sure, first rounders, whatever. Like, even take away this year completely. Like, let's not even talk about Penix, whatever. But I mean, just in general, Fontenot's day two picks have all been, not all, but for the most part, they've been awful. Like, just the majority: Jalen Mayfield, Richie Grant, you know, D'Angelo Malone, Arnold Ebiketie. Jury's out on him, but you know, he's still unproven. Jury's still out on Zach Harrison. Like, it's just, you know, if some of these second round picks were hits, then, you know, this team maybe would not have won 7 games each of the last 3 years. And I think that is something where you do absolutely have to hold the general manager accountable, because, you know, the victories as a GM, that's not your top 10 picks. Like, I feel like if you're a GM, you should be able to hit on top 10 picks, like, no matter what, or you just have no place, you know, in this league as a decision maker. I'm sorry. But where you're going to earn your money, it's the day two picks. It's finding those gems on day three. And, you know, that's been severely lacking for the Falcons under this regime over the past few years. And I can't really sugarcoat that any other way, because if that doesn't improve, then this team will probably be looking for a new general manager in the next year or two. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think that's a concern. Like, you got to hit on your day two picks. Obviously you can't hit on all of them, but 50%, I mean, is kind of the bar, right, that you expect in general. And, you know, I think it depends. Like, this year, if we see Arnold Ebiketie and Troy Andersen like play and play well, then we probably have a very different opinion after this season. Same thing, like, if Matthew Bergeron emerges as like a plus starter and Zach Harrison plays more, like, we could have a very different opinion after this season. And obviously we'll see what happens with the rookies too. But at this time, it's like, we've seen a lot of problems on day two, and the rest of them are more or less like still question marks. So we need to get some dubs. We need some day two dubs. And maybe this is the year we can finally see some of them. That would be really nice. But Adnan, who was your second guy that you want to talk about?
When it comes to the defense, I mean, we sort of touched on DeMarco Helms a little bit. I guess we can talk about him a little bit more, because, like I said, I'm not going to be confident at all if Richie Grant is the week one starter, or, you know, the starter, unless I see a vast like change, and hopefully Richie Grant makes me eat these words. But I mean, yeah, DeMarco Helms, that's the guy, if not Richie Grant, at strong safety. And I think that's sort of unfair to have that expectation on him, given that he was a seventh rounder. But I mean, the front office hasn't really given us much choice, because they haven't addressed safety at all beyond, you know, bringing in some camp bodies. So if it's not Grant, it has to be Helms, and Helms has to be a solid, strong safety. Like, if we can get sort of just below league average from Helms, I think that's going to be a huge win, and that would be a huge win for a seventh rounder in general. But yeah, he's someone who had a really strong camp, had a really strong preseason last year, got an interception against the Dolphins. It is a very, I know that they really like him. I know that the team really likes Helms. The last coaching staff really liked Helms as well. I think this one is really going to like him too. You know, comes from Alabama, is a thumper, can really sort of get down and dirty when it comes to stopping the run game, which is always a nice thing. But again, you know, as the safety, your main concern is covering, it's coverage. You know, can you cover the opposing team's tight end? Like, you can't get away with not being a strong cover guy as a safety. Maybe you could in the 90s, not in 2024. But yeah, DeMarco Helms, like, if he can take that next step, like, that's going to go a long way in helping this defense sort of avoid that little bit of regression, because, you know, the team did not get good play from the strong safety position last year. And, you know, it could possibly even be even worse this year. But that's sort of one of those positions where if you can sort of have an improvement over last year, then it'll really help fight that regression, you know, possibly in other positions where, you know, there will be a regression.
Yeah, I like Helms. I think he when you talk about, like, seventh round picks, you know, you're not necessarily expecting a lot. I think you look back to the next, like, legendary the last legendary seventh round safety for the Falcons, and Kamal Ishmael, another UCF legend. You know, and like, I think, you know, Helms is on track to be Kamal Ishmael or even surpass Kamal Ishmael, because I think Ishmael, like, even more perhaps than I'm losing my train of thought. At any rate, what I was trying to say was DeMarco Helms, I think, is a little bit more well-rounded than Kamal Ishmael was. Ishmael's like a very strong safety and like basically transitioned to linebacker later in his career. So like, he's like the extreme end of the strong safety, and he played that role really well. There's no doubt about that. And I think that Helms could have a more well-rounded career there. He was always known, I think, in college as being super smart, which I think when you're drafting seventh round picks, you know, you're either getting guys that are just athleticism and like, well, the rest of it, we're going to figure it out. Or you're getting guys that are the guys that the coaches love, the really smart players that just don't necessarily check the boxes in terms of, you know, athleticism, size, what have you. So Helms is in that second group where he's very intelligent, super well-versed in the scheme. He played as a freshman at Alabama, which is extremely difficult to do. You have to have command of their scheme and system in order to get on the field there. And that's why I think Helms was able to get on the field so early in Atlanta. So I like Helms. I think he'll do a good job. With him, it's like, does he have the ceiling to be like a long-term NFL starter? I'm not sure. You know, we'll see. There could be untapped potential there. And safety is one of those positions where athleticism is kind of overrated, right? Like, it's, if you're smart, if you're instinctual, you can take steps before the offense takes steps, and you can look like you're more athletic than you are. I mean, always go back to Desmond Southard on that one. Doesn't matter if you run a 4.3 if you don't know where you're going. So, yeah. But what do you think about? I know you brought up Helms, well, you know, in yours too, Joe. So,
yeah, it's definitely, especially with like all the match coverage that these teams are running nowadays. I feel like it kind of helps cover up for the athleticism at that safety spot. And we're seeing like some of the older safeties in the league are having some of their, you know, better years. There's some among the, you know, they get short contracts nowadays, but like they're kind of key pieces to some of these defenses. I think we're still at the stage with Helms where we don't know exactly what he is or what he's going to be. We're still kind of learning about his game at the NFL level. But yeah, I mean, everything that you said about, you know, him being able to play and kind of hold down that spot at Alabama for so long, I think speaks so much to, you know, the kind of professionalism that he has, even though that's not like technically a professional level of the sport. But it was interesting to me to see him get playing time. The first time I noticed him in a game, I think it was like week six. It was that Tampa Bay game. And noticed him on the field, and it's like, wow, a seventh round pick actually getting defensive snaps this early in the season. They must see something in him. And sure enough, he eventually kind of earned that job. And, you know, I would say he was kind of like a middle of the road kind of NFL safety last year, but that's pretty good for, you know, where he was drafted. So if he can kind of carry on from there, I think the Falcons are in really good shape just from a value perspective. Whether that's good enough for what they want this defense to be, I think that's the kind of bigger question. But, you know, I think that something that this Falcons team will want out of that safety opposite Jesse Bates, because Jesse is so good at reading the game and obviously making these big plays, all those big interceptions he had last year, you ideally want a safety who can kind of cover for some of the free safety responsibilities on certain plays, where then you can kind of have Jesse used as like a robber, because he's going to be better at that, which is that's typically like something that a strong safety would do, but that's something that Jesse can do so much better than anybody else on this roster in terms of like reading those quarterback's eyes and making those picks, whether it was against Bryce Young in those Carolina games or against Derek Carr. That was just pure instinct that he has, and he's so good at it. You want to put him in those positions more and not less. Yeah. And so can the other safety in this defense kind of allow Jesse to be as free and do what he wants to do? I think that's really how you're looking to maximize the kind of impact that you get from the secondary and the safety group in particular.
Yeah, no, and it's, that's the thing about this scheme. If they're running a similar scheme to what the Rams ran in Los Angeles, you know, they're going to do a lot of sim pressures. They're going to do a lot of looks where they're going to send a linebacker and drop an edge rusher in coverage. And when you do that, when you send that linebacker, you have to have a safety come in and fill where that linebacker is rushing from in terms of the run game. And so you are going to typically have a safety play more as a box-focused safety. Last year, the Falcons were basically rotating the safeties. They were having split safety looks. They were having these guys rotate pretty much all the time as a way of sort of disguising the coverage, confusing the offense. And that's a perfectly valid way to do things too. But it could lead to the team putting the strong safety in disadvantageous positions where, like, Jesse Bates is coming up to the line of scrimmage and playing in the box where he's perfectly good at doing that. Like, it's not like it's a problem for him to be doing that, but the other guy wasn't necessarily capable of doing the Jesse Bates role on the back end. So, you know, we'll probably see Jesse Bates more focused, like you're saying, Joe, on that back end role where he's going to be roaming back there. He's going to be free to make plays in the middle of the field. And you're going to have a guy that's a more designated strong safety come up and make plays in the box and allow Jesse to be more free. And I think that will be ultimately a good thing for the defense in terms of, because it's one thing if you have two versatile safeties, because in that point you do want to rotate and mix and match because it causes a lot of chaos. But if you've got a focused safety, like I think DeMarco Helms is an excellent classic box safety. Richie Grant's played better in the box too. So it's like, if you've got those type of guys as your second safety, you probably should play them in the box more. It's just, you know, put your guys in the position to succeed. I'll touch on my guy real quick because we're already over an hour, but I was going to bring up Zach Harrison. I know we talked about him a little bit, but it's kind of the same thing to Arnold Ebiketie. The Falcons didn't really add much to the edge group. I think they're expecting big things from Zach Harrison, who it sounds like he's going to play kind of big end for this team, like play sort of five tech and be a key run defender, be a key pass rusher, perhaps play some 3-4 defensive end looks as well when they want to do that. I think Zach Harrison's going to be a key part of the rotation, and I think the team has an enormous amount of faith in him, probably bulking up a bit, being more of that big five tech guy. And I think he's going to thrive in that role. I think he was one of the pleasant surprises of last year where he came on real strong. He's a guy that obviously has all the traits and athleticism, didn't really put together consistent production in college, which is why he ended up lasting until the third round. But, you know, the fact that the team's not adding a ton and is relying on these young players, you know, and bringing up, you know, Lorenzo Carter as well. Like, Lorenzo Carter's never been a stat stuffer in terms of his sack production, but he's known as a super well-rounded and just terrific athlete on the edge. And what Lorenzo Carter does really well is drop into coverage. Like, that was just weirdly, like, he was, I think, the top rated coverage edge rusher, like, on PFF multiple years in a row, which is a weird stat to have. But like, what the Rams did under Raheem Morris last year was they dropped Michael Hock into coverage like constantly. Like, I think he dropped into coverage on like 35% of his snaps. Wow. And that was not a great like situation for Hock. Like, that was not, you know, tremendous for him, but it's because of the sim pressures and the way they do things. if they're dropping Lorenzo Carter, that's actually a role that he's good at. Like, he can cover tight ends. Like, he's the rare, you know, Lorenzo Carter, another perfect 10 RAS guy. He's actually capable of running with tight ends and covering guys downfield and actually changing direction. Whereas, like, Michael Hawks, like, he's a full 4-3 defensive end, maybe, like, arguably an interior pass rusher size guy. Like, that's just not a great situation for him to be in. So if you look a little bit closer at how they've arranged this, it's like maybe they don't have the star power. Maybe they didn't go out and add any big names, but they do have specific guys to fill specific roles that fit the scheme, like Lorenzo Carter. And Zach Harrison, I think, is one of those guys that's going to be a key piece on this defense going forward. And if he could take that next step and be one of these primary pass rusher, run defender guys, that could go a long way to you know, I think they're just basically hoping he can take over Calais Campbell's role, because obviously Calais Campbell ends up going to Miami. They need someone to sort of take over that role, and no one's going to be Calais. You know, I'm really happy we had him for the 1 year. It was awesome to have him here in Atlanta, but they need someone to sort of fill those shoes to some extent. And, you know, I said it at the time last year, like, Zach Harrison is like, he's like baby Calais Campbell. Like, it's like, this is the guy that, like, if he's like hoping to become someone, he probably is hoping he becomes Calais Campbell. So it was just so great to have Calais here to mentor him for a year and just have Harrison just work directly under him. And I hope that will pay dividends here in 2024. But you got Harrison takes, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an Ohio State fan, so I watched Zach Harrison for a long time there. Obviously, he was kind of the source of frustration for a lot of Ohio State fans, because, and this was kind of talked about in the draft after he was selected, but he just never really had the sack production. But, you know, I think it's because he's not that kind of player. Like, he's not that kind of, like, you know, demon off the edge kind of player. He's the one who came to my mind immediately whenever it was that Raheem was talking about how much they value the length. I think it was when he was talking about Rook after the draft. But, you know, Harrison was one who came to my mind because he was kind of in that draft. Tyree Wilson from Texas A&M was, you know, he was ultimately a top 10 pick. I think the Raiders took him right in front of the Falcons. But he, you know, was so valued by these teams because he had these arm, the wingspan that was insane. And Zach Harrison, like, physically, like, the physical profile, not much worse than Tyree Wilson in that draft. And so I think they actually got really good value drafting him where they did. And I think that he's developed kind of on a positive track, more so than a lot of the guys they've taken in this 2-3 round range. So I'm really excited for him. I was the one who kind of, like, started when about his size. And he did acknowledge that he has added some weight. I wouldn't say he's, like, you know, a different player or anything, but it was just something that, like, really was noticeable when you're like, oh wow, you definitely look bigger. And I think that's good to see. I think that'll give him a lot more versatility in this scheme, especially where he can kind of move around the line. But yeah, when we were talking about those sacks, if you're gonna get 40 or anywhere close, you're gonna need, like, a lot of these guys to chip in with, like, three or four, you know. Like, I think that's the way the Falcons get to that number, obviously. And Zach Harrison's a guy who I think has the potential to do that, especially the way that he ended last season. He really started kind of getting after the quarterback and getting home in some certain situations. Has some decent mobility out on the edge too. I know that was kind of a sticking point last year for this team, was they just didn't really seem as athletic in those edge situations with those big edges that Ryan Nielsen preferred. So he gives you a little bit more youth in that respect as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good comp with him and Tyree Wilson. I think that's, like, his fifth or sixth, like, closest comp on mock draftable is Tyree Wilson. Interestingly enough, Zach Harrison, bigger. He's not taller.
Is he even bigger?
He weighed in at the combine 3 pounds heavier. And he had 36.25-inch arms, which is 98th percentile. Tyree Wilson, very long arms, but he was only 35.58, so he's only 96th percentile. So Harrison, even crazier length than Tyree Wilson. So, and I think, you know, you could look back and say, like, Zach Harrison actually had a better rookie season than Tyree Wilson.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, definitely, I think maybe the Falcons ended up lucking out there. Also found it just funny that one of his top comps is also Ade Ogundeji, Zach Harrison. So another, like, big, long edge rusher. So maybe Zach Harrison can carry the torch, as we say a fond farewell to Ogundeji. But Adnan, you got any takes on Zach Harrison to wrap us up tonight?
Yeah, no, I talked about Zach Harrison along with my Ebikadi takes, but Zach Harrison, I think he could really be the guy. If it's not Ebukadi, I think it really could be Zach Harris. I'm really excited about him. He definitely has the size. He has the length. He was a pleasant surprise last year. We watched him in camp, and he was very good in camp last season. And then when he did get his chance, he sort of showed up. He got a few sacks in there. And I mean, this year, now it's that it's going to be similar. It's going to be similar to what we're doing with Braylon Trice, right? You take him in day two. You don't really put that expectation on him in year one. You put him lower on the depth chart. If he can give you anything, that's a bonus. And then next year, we're going to have this expectation that Braylon Trice is going to, sort of take that step. And for that, that's this year for Zach Harrison. He could be the starting left defensive end in week one this year. This is a guy I'm really, really looking forward to seeing in training camp. I'm gonna have my eyes very close on him, as well as some of the other guys that we mentioned. But yeah, Zach Harrison, this is, I feel like the sky's the limit for him. He has every opportunity to be successful in this defense. I feel like it's him or Ebukadi, one of these guys. Like, it doesn't even have to be both of them. One of these guys, we need that leap. We have to have that leap. Because if we don't, then we're going into next year, again, needing a pass rusher. And at the same time, also having some other holes that we really, really need to fill. And it's the nature of the beast in the NFL. You have to pick and choose your weaknesses. No team is going to be really, really strong at every single position. But you really want to minimize the number of those holes in that ship, because you only get a finite amount of resources in the draft and in free agency, especially now for the Falcons, because they won't have as much money to spend as we've grown accustomed to in these past 2 years moving forward. We'll see how much the NFL salary cap keeps increasing as well, so that may be premature, but definitely it would be a boon if this team had one of these pass rushers really take that next step, to where we're not next year talking about, we have to give a premium pick on a pass rusher, despite possibly needing a right tackle as well, despite possibly needing a cornerback, despite possibly needing a safety. At that point, it's just, it's so many holes, and then the boat is going down fast. So we need to plug up these holes as soon as we can.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's an exciting player in Zach Harrison. And like you said, if we could get both to work out,
that would be great.
That would be great. Yeah. But between
they get both,
the
defense is going to be really good.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing with this defense. Like, I think we're all expecting regression, just because I think they overperformed relative to their talent level last year, and they didn't necessarily like net add talent this year either. But like, I just look back to what I like when people were asking me about the Rams last year. I did a lot of fantasy shows and stuff on some other networks, and I was like, yeah, the Rams defense is like, it scares the hell out of me. Like, it's a bunch of rookies, a bunch of young players. Like, this is not super, it's not proven. They have a couple of guys, they got Aaron Donald, but like, it's going to be a bad defense. And I think that's going to put them in troublesome situations. And then it's literally the same thing with the Falcons. It's like, well, they got Jesse Bates, they got a couple guys in the interior, but it's like a lot of question marks, a lot of young players. Is it going to work out? It worked out for the Rams. So we've seen it work. It can work. I think Raheem Morris is a lot more flexible in terms of what he's willing to do. I mean, if you look at his history, he went into the Rams, he got to Los Angeles, and then immediately, he did an interview recently on the Athletic Football Show talking to Robert Mays, where he was like, yeah, when I got there, I just was like, okay, I'll just learn the defense that you guys are running. We don't have to change terms. He's like, why would I make the 60 players on this roster learn new terms when I could just learn the terms they're already using? And it's like, wow, like, that's so obvious to do that, but like, no one does that. It's like, yeah. So I think with Raheem here, it's like, as good as Ryan Nielsen was, it's not meant as a slander against Ryan Nielsen, but I think the Falcons, like Raheem is thinking that he can maximize what the team has and craft a scheme alongside Jimmy Lake that will take advantage of what the Falcons have, and that might put them in a better situation to have a functional defense. Not even talking about top defense, just like a functional,
right?
top 20, top 15 would be great type defense, because they're not going to be ideally turning the ball over at an absurd rate. That's going to cut down on the defense's exposure. So if they do have a small regression sort of to like the back half of the teens, it could be okay, especially, and I think some of the guys we talked about are going to be key players alongside the coaching and the scheme to make that happen. So, yeah. All right, guys. Well, great stuff. I think we got to six top players. That's good stuff there. Appreciate Joe. Appreciate Adnan for coming on, and Adnan for you know, leaving the NBA draft, which I imagine is a very exciting event. Maybe. I don't know. I see people like trash talking the NBA draft all the time, but you know, it is what it is. Glad to have Adnan. Glad to have Joe. Guys, he is Joe Patrick at JPatrick200 on the Twitters. Joe, anything you'd like to let people know about before we sign off?
No, I just can't wait till training camp gets here. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that for sure. Adnan is at Say Which Way. Anything else you're working on, Adnan, to let the people know about?
I'm just going to keep plugging away at the Falcoholic. We are continuing to, you know, slog through this dead period and trying to give, you know, any possible content during this time period. You know, we're on our Aaron Freeman grind where, you know, he's giving you five shows a day or five shows a week somehow. So
five shows a day. Wow. Some DJ talk right there. Yeah.
At some point, if we were doing five shows a day, what day of the week would we just be like, all right, you know, we're not going to talk Falcons at all. You know, we're just going to talk about
it. It'll be Tuesday. By Tuesday, I'd be like, I have nothing else to talk about. We covered it all on Monday, folks. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
So. Yeah, Tuesday, 1 p.m. All right, you know, yeah, how's the coffee tasting?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about
yeah, alcoholic coffee rankings. Yeah.
I mean, hey, that could be a day three of the draft topic next year during the spring.
Yeah, I'll write it down. Add it to the hopper.
Yeah. So So you know, I'm just like plugging the Falcoholic. I know Kevin, you and I won't be here for the next couple of weeks.
Right. Yeah. There won't be Wednesday shows next week or the week after, because I know you and I are traveling at various times. So we're just not gonna.
Yeah.
We're gonna take a little break. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Dave is sending us on a cruise.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. David definitely is funding this whole project for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Dave won't even pay to keep the lights on. You know, George Costanza is keeping the lights on here.
Yes.
but yeah, no, definitely just plugging away the fellow colleague. I'm with Joe. You know, cannot wait for, you know, training camp. We are going to, you know, have a comprehensive like we do every year. And yeah, Joe, I'm really looking forward to getting with you at camp this year as well. Looking forward to seeing you in person.
Yep, it's gonna be fun. Can't wait.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 292. I'm Kevin Knight of Falcoholic. Kevin, like Adnan said, no Wednesday shows the next 2 weeks, but we will have plenty of recorded shows coming out. We'll be getting into our roster preview series. It's going to start on Friday with our newest contributor at the Falcoholic, Jamel Johnson, joining me for quarterbacks and running backs. And then we're going to have some various other ones coming out a few a week over the next couple weeks as we get geared up for training camp. Thinking I will have a fun returning guest to announce for the pre-training camp Wednesday night show, but can't officially announce yet, so we'll keep that as a tease. But please like, subscribe, guys, leave that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Once again, running our patron fantasy leagues here on the Falcoholic Live, so if you're interested in taking part in those, you can join on the Patreon, you can join on the YouTube channel memberships to get access to that, get access to early access podcasts, videos, all that good stuff. So until then, guys, we will be, like I said, back with some recorded shows, and we'll be taking a couple weeks off for the Wednesday show, but we'll be locked and loaded for training camp coming up real soon. So thank you guys so much for joining us. We will see you next time on the Falcoholic Live. Have a great night, folks.